What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome back to my show, What the Health. Thanks, everybody, for joining me today. You are in the right place because on this fabulous show, we dive into the never-ending world, weird and wonderful world, of health and fitness. Every week, I get to spend time with some incredible guests. Athletes, doctors, nutritionists, leading PTs and fitness professionals, and many more. I pick their massive brains and we discuss their forte and get their opinions on my misconceptions, myths and all these trends that we see on Insta and TikTok these days because it's never ending. We know it can be a battle. It's amazing to have such a wealth of information on the internet, but it can also be quite daunting and overwhelming. So that's why we meet all these crazy people that know all these crazy things, because we can kind of get the real truth, you know? And that's what the show's here for. We want to help you in your fitness journey, reach your goals. And at the end of each show, I myself answer some of your fitness questions as well. So make sure you stick around for that. And in the meantime, if anything does spring to mind, send us a message on Instagram at WhatTheHealthShow. You see a little picture of me. And that's where you need to send your message. So on today's show, we have Travis Owls, who is a High Rocks athlete. Can't wait to speak to him after going to High Rocks this weekend. The energy in that room is just incredible. We also have Nicole Vignola, I think that's how you say it, neuroscientist and author of Rewire. God, say that fast. Author of Rewire. Break the cycle, alter your thoughts, and create lasting change. But first of all, in this segment, we're going to be discussing and debunking some of the biggest health and fitness myths and trends with Dr. Sophie Newton, who is a GP, a British medical doctor, mum of three, passionate about sharing accurate, honest evidence based on medical information, which is what we need. Are you there, my love?
I am. Hello.
Hello, babe. Nice to meet you.
And you?
Thanks for joining us today.
You're most welcome.
So, talk to us. What are your top tips for spotting misinformation on the internet?
Well, I would say I see a lot of when people say this is the one thing that's going to solve all your problems.
Yeah.
This is the you know, the miracle thing. And essentially, there is no one thing that will solve everyone's problems. So if something is making like a huge claim, especially if it's lacking evidence, then I would be already immediately suspicious. So if I get that, and then if it's someone who hasn't actually got the qualifications to be telling, to talk about that thing that they're suggesting is a miracle cure, and then I think the cherry on it is then if they say, what you do need is this one thing that I can sell you for this very high price.
Yeah.
So if it sounds too good to be true and they want a lot of your money, I'd just be very skeptical because chances are it's not true.
That's the hook though, isn't it? As an influencer, we're told it's like, tell them in the first 3 seconds that it's going to change their life and then that's it, they're in.
I know, I know. And that's the thing about kind of communication online as well, because I have a YouTube channel and I understand you've got to get that hook. People, you know, they've all got short attention spans.
Yeah.
And people do want the easy, quick wins.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, life and actual science is way more boring. The truth is usually you've got to work hard at it. You've got to do all the boring, healthy stuff. You've got to stick at it. And realistically, there's not one thing that's going to work. It's your overall balanced, healthy living. But nobody wants to hear that.
So no, exactly. Everyone just wants quick fixes, 100%. So yeah. What is the most common health myth that you come across as a doctor then?
Lots of things about... Oh, there are so many, actually. Lots of things about how you can burn belly fat fast. In the next 3 weeks by having kind of, you know, apple cider vinegar or, you know, this one thing that will do it. So all of those things is usually just, like I said, it's not just one thing.
There's millions of them.
Supplements that you need to spend tons and tons of money on, millions of different supplements, when really it's just, most of it's just expensive wee, because you're just going to wee it out.
I love that.
About a super... Yeah, it is. Your body's probably just not great. Your body doesn't digest nutrients in the same form from supplements as it does from food.
That's actually a great hook.
Unless
it's like
you've got
how to avoid spending loads on your wee. That should be your next hook.
Yeah. That's it. I should go for that title. So most of the time you'd be much better off spending your money on eating well.
Yeah.
And getting kind of a really good variety of you know, plants, fruits, vegetables, and spending your money on doing exercise that you enjoy, then kind of the supplements and everything else that you might hear or see on social media.
I think that's like what we just said about the misinformation and, you know, realistically, anything that is worth it and sustainable actually just does take time, patience, consistency, not all these supplements and fad diets. Yeah. So when people say to you about the burning fat, I get this one as well. It's like, no, you can't target belly fat. You have to, it's everything else, unfortunately. If we could, we'd all have six packs.
Yeah. Yeah, and if there were this easy solution, then I, the GP, would be doing it for my patients. You know, the NHS would be like, brilliant, obesity is such a huge problem. We'll all just do this one thing and we'll no longer have this crisis of type 2 diabetes and heart disease. But it, unfortunately, we know that it just isn't that easy and life gets in the way as well. Because that's the other thing, because it's also easy to say people just eat well and exercise well. But, you know, some people are struggling with their mental health.
Yeah.
And people aren't sleeping well. That's the other thing as well. You know, people don't realise how much sleep impacts your weight and your well-being. So you do need to have a look at the whole picture, their stress levels, everything that's going on to try and... Because health isn't just looking good in a mirror in a bikini. Health is
so much
whole
more
well-being
that.
In the person.
100%. Okay, I've got some Mythbuster quickfire questions for you. If you want to elaborate, feel free to. But first of all, I'm going to ask you very quickly and then, you know, quick responses. Does drinking salt water improve digestion?
No, I would not do that.
No, don't do that.
unless you're vomiting, you've got diarrhea, or you're excessively sweating, then don't do that. In fact, it may make you dehydrated.
Okay. Does cinnamon help balance hormones?
There is some evidence that cinnamon can be helpful for women who've got polycystic ovarian syndrome. But the evidence is pretty weak, and overall, actually, spices and herbs are brilliant to add in. So just think about adding in them whenever you can to your diet. But it's not great evidence, so I wouldn't worry too much about cinnamon.
Okay. Do you lose about half of your body heat through your head?
Oh, good one. No, this is an urban myth. It's not true.
It's from Mary Poppins. So... Isn't that? Didn't she used to say that? That if your head gets wet, then you... Yeah, if your head gets wet, then that's how you get ill or something. Was it that?
What's
the song? Spoonful of... No, that's something else. Never mind. Never mind. So you don't lose about all your body heat through your head, no?
No, not true.
Okay. Do you need 8 glasses of water a day?
Oh, this is a really good one to debunk, because that is definitely not true. Because it all depends on how much you're eating. You know, how much you're eating. We have a lot of liquids in our eating. How hot you are, how much exercise you're doing. If you've just been to a, you know, hot yoga class. So just listen to your body. When you're thirsty is when you need to make sure you're drinking, and make sure obviously drinking plenty of water rather than just caffeine and alcohol and things like that.
Yeah, fair.
So just listen to your body.
Can I ask, when it comes to drinking water, so I know a lot of people that say, oh, I drink loads of water, but they drink it with cordial and things like that. Is that just as good? You know, you get those little...
It is just as good for your hydration, just not as good for your teeth or your blood sugar levels.
Yeah, and it's the aspartame
if you don't
in it.
Want water, then, yeah. Aspartame I won't worry about too much, as long as you're not drinking excessive. So if you're having, you know, the odd can of Diet Coke or whatever... That's
I said
fine.
That I learned this off another doctor that we had on once, because I think people get so hyper-focused on things that they're like, aspartame, you know, it gives you cancer, it does this. It's like, you'd have to have a lot of it, a lot of it every single day.
It's a huge amount you need to have, huge amount. So even if you're having 3 cans a day, I'm sure you're fine, but just, you know, just keep an eye on it. But yeah, aspartame I do not worry about.
Okay, good.
I drink Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah, me too. I love it. Okay, so I heard that recently you were at the House of Lords to discuss how to tackle antimicrobial resistance. Can you explain more about this? I do have it written down what it is, but if you want to explain that.
Yeah. So, yeah, people might not have heard of it. So it's antimicrobial resistance. It's essentially, this is about how antibiotics may stop working. Already we're seeing that we've got strains of bacteria and viruses that no longer... we have any antibiotics that work for them. So it may be that there comes a time when you'll have an infection and no longer antibiotics work, which is kind of really dangerous. In fact, they think that by 2050, more people are going to die from antimicrobial resistance than cancer. So about 10 million deaths a year. So we're all using too many antibiotics. We kind of too readily think, oh, I've got a bit of a sore throat or a bit of a cough. I better go get some antibiotics. So we just need to make sure that we're being really sensible, because they are life-saving when they're used appropriately. So we need to make sure in humans and in animals, as doctors, as patients, everyone's being kind of sensible and aware of the risks of taking antibiotics when we don't need to.
Right. So would you suggest then, if you are, so say if you feel like you've got tonsillitis or something, I am actually quite a little bit old-fashioned in that respect, that I will always try and help let my body fight it first, and probably because I can't bother to go and sit in a GP surgery. But, you know, I would like to think that my body has the resilience and resistance to fight it off. But some people, you know, it's the same as with other things that we spoke about earlier. Quick fixes, antibiotics, just go and get them because they just dish them out these days.
Yeah, exactly. I get so many patients saying, you know, I started with a sore throat today or yesterday. And I think, come on, give it a bit of time.
Yeah.
You know, but we have got great immune systems. Our bodies are incredible. Obviously, if you've got a problem with your immune system or you've suffered a lot in the past or you're unwell with it, you know, you feel shocking and you've got a high temperature and, you know, then get a review. But the vast majority of people do not need antibiotics for these simple infections. Even urine infections, most of the time your body can deal with it by itself. We don't need to jump on the antibiotics. Like, it, you know, as a doctor, it's often, we've got so many people, it's often easier. People want that prescription to go away with. So often we're a bit like, okay, we'll give you the prescription, and we have to not do that. We have to be sensible. And there are kind of ways that we can assess and see whether or not it's most likely to be a viral, because viruses do not need antibiotics. They won't help at all. And antibiotics kill off your gut microbiome, which is where your immune system, most of it sits. So not only we get diarrhea and vomiting, but you'll also have a lower immune system after you've had the antibiotics. So when people come in and they really want antibiotics for their kids, I'm like, no, don't do this, this to your baby or your child. Like, you know, I've got three kids and I think have had like antibiotics once. I mean, that's lucky.
Tough love.
I don't want to make people feel bad about having to do it for their children. But if the doctor has said you probably don't need them, then great.
Okay.
That's a win.
So do you have any health hacks then that you can recommend to people to help build their immune system and to avoid wanting antibiotics?
It is all the boring stuff. It is the eating well, exercising, don't drink too much alcohol, don't smoke. It's the boring stuff. But I think a health hack that I would suggest, that I do suggest to my patients, is definitely about so avoiding being sedentary. So someone like me as a GP, I sit a lot all day. So even if you, and Sulisha, even if you get up in the morning, do like an hour's gym class or whatever, if you then sit all day, that the damages of just sitting actually negates the fact that you got up and did that exercise. So you're much better off trying to break up your day with little short bursts of activity. This lowers your blood sugar, it helps fight cholesterol, it improves your kind of muscle metabolism and your the protein that's taken in. So if you can do things like chair squats or go and walk up and down the stairs in the hall, or just do something that moves for a few minutes, kind of as often as you can throughout the day. I just do tiny bursts. Everyone I know sometimes walks in, I'm just doing little star jumps. I'm like, hi!
I love it!
And I know I look a bit of an idiot, but I don't care. And now nobody notices because they're used to me being... Or I like skip down the corridor when I go and collect patients. But it's
I love
really
that you bring the energy to the room, you
I'm
know.
Bringing the energy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm bringing the energy. And I'm like, come on, guys. What are you going to say? I'm sorry, I'm trying to be helpful. No, you do it too. I'm trying to get everyone else to do it. And then nobody feels like an idiot.
I do love
that. If we're all idiots, we can be idiots together.
Exactly. Let's all just be idiots. I think, you know, it's... Obviously, people have different jobs. Like, I have the luxury of not having to sit at a desk all day unless I want to. But I think if you do... Most people could set an alarm on the phone for every like 45 minutes, and then every 45 minutes you just get up and even just, I was going to say do like 10 burpees, but you know, you can just do 10 star jumps if you want instead. But yeah, just move your body. I really like that. I think that is something that's another hook that you can put on. Everyone, let's be idiots together. And then like...
just be silly. And I think if you find it fun, because that's a lot of the thing about, like, I guess a lot of people listening are probably already into exercise, but for people who are kind of starting out with exercise, it feels like daunting. Like, do I have to go and join a gym? I'm overweight, I'm nervous. And it's like, you can do anything. You know, anyone can do this. Just start moving. Just find something that you find enjoyable and just make your body move, you know.
Yeah.
And then from that, you'll probably be able to build on it. And eventually, before you know it, you'll be a gym buddy because you love it.
Exactly. I love that. Well, on that note, I am going to finish this with that amazing bit of information from you. Thank you so much, Sophie. It was incredible to talk to you. Enjoy your star jumps. Keep bringing the energy.
Yeah, I'll get back to it.
And I'll speak to you soon. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Gabby.
Take care, love.
Bye.
How gorgeous she. It's true though, guys. Like, just find something that you enjoy doing, even if it is just those star jumps, just 5 minutes of your time every couple of hours, then that's really going to help you get the blood flow going and just increase your overall daily neat expenditure, for my clients listening. Okay, so I just want to talk to you about my exercise of the week. It's the goat exercise for the lower body at the moment, and it's a favourite amongst booty building girls as well. So it's a unilateral exercise, and it's great for balancing out imbalances. And always make sure that you start on the weaker leg. Can you guess what it is? It is, drum roll, the step-ups. So you can, when you're using a cable, it's actually a step down, really, but they're just called step-ups universally. But if you are using dumbbells, then it would be a step-up because you start at the bottom and you step up onto the bench. If you are going to do the dumbbell step-up, I would suggest starting near a wall and only using one weight to start off with. And you always want to make sure that your knee is in line with the foot, even before adding a weight, because it's all about stabilizing your, you know, your ankle, your knee and everything. But it is a great exercise for increasing your knee strength and therefore going to help your bigger compound moves like your squats, your leg presses, you know, those ones that you can rack all the weights up. And you can make it glute or quad dominant. So if you hinge at the hips, it makes it more glute dominant. And I like to pop something underneath my toes as well, so it makes it even more about the booty, because all your weight's in your heels and you can drive it up there, big, give it a big squeeze at the top and then let it all go. So yeah, let me know how you find your step ups. Do you prefer to use dumbbells? Do you prefer to use cables? You can also do it with a barbell. There's loads of opportunity for it. But yeah, get them into your workout this week and I will see you after the break.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
FUBAR Radio presents
What the Health with Gabby Allen. Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like, you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like, I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them like a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip. Actually, we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
I was like, hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take I don't have £1,000, but you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs.
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling, so for me to place a bet on there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would, because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral
standing. We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio. Okay, we are back in business. So I am joined by Travis Owls. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, there we go.
He's a High Rocks athlete and co-founder of the Summit Mentality. Hello, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming in. So talk to me then. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions and you have to answer them as quick as possible. Okay?
Nice.
I have some written down here, but I'm actually going to go off the top of my head as well. First of all, though, I do like this one. Three words to describe yourself.
Oh, fun, active, and outgoing.
Love it. Upper or lower body day?
Ooh, upper.
Okay. Sled or ski egg?
Sled, 100%.
Sled pull or sled push?
Sled push.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's quicker.
Okay. What's your go-to cheat meal?
Probably a waffle. I love a waffle. Yeah, love waffles.
A savoury waffle, though, or a sweet waffle?
Sweet waffle, 100%.
Yeah. What would you have on it? I need to know this now. I would have chocolate, like Nutella, banana, and ice cream.
I'm a peanut butter guy.
Yeah.
Chocolate, peanut butter, like Reese's.
Yeah. Would you have that before or after a workout?
Before.
Yeah. Pre-workout vibes? Yeah,
ready for it.
And what is your workout anthem?
I actually don't know. I don't really have one.
Do you know how? So, have you done a marathon or anything like that?
Yeah, I've done a few.
And no one listens to music. No. I'm that mad. I would need drum and bass in my ears the whole time.
Oh, just to get I'm like listening to my breathing.
Oh.
I'm one of those weirdos.
He's a proper athlete, guys. That's how we know he's a proper athlete. Okay, so talk to me then. You are a HYROX athlete and you've completed 12. Wait, hang on. I think this person's crazy. 12 HYROX competitions in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Did you not sleep?
Nope, didn't sleep.
Okay, so did you train for this? Did you know you were going to do it? Was it off the bat?
Yeah, it took me a year to organise. I done it with my best mate, Callum Bratt. It took us a year to organise. So we done 12 doubles HYROXes in 24 hours. So it was it worked out every 2 hours we'd do another HYROX. So our strategy was do one in an hour and a half, rest 30 minutes, go again.
Did they gradually get shorter? I mean, longer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over time, we tried to pace it well, so we just hit an hour and a half, done whatever in the half-hour break, and then just went again. It was a mental battle the entire time, though.
Right, guys, I went to HYROX this weekend, and I haven't... People always say, have you not done one yet? Do you not want to do one? I do, but I'm competitive, and when I go, I want to make sure that, like, I want a one... If I'm going to do doubles, I want a 1 hour, 8 minutes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think I've got that in my locker.
Yeah.
But... You know, I just want it to be good, so I haven't trained for it yet. I think I might do one later on in the year. Anyway, if you haven't been to these HYROX competitions, you go there and the energy in the room, I'm not surprised actually that you managed to do 12 because the energy is just so good.
The atmosphere, it fills you up.
Yeah, but it's freaking tough. Like, it is so hard. Like, so what is it? Talk us through what you have to do then. What are the workout stations?
So I got this rolling off the tongue now. So you do 8 kilometres and in between each 1K, you do a functional fitness exercise. So it goes 1K run into the ski, then you do sled push, sled pull, burpee broad jumps, onto the rower. Then you do farmer's carries, lunges, and then wall balls to finish.
So, my least favourite is definitely ski erg. My triceps are just not built for that move.
It's the first one as well. That sets you up. How you come off of there is how your race is going.
But then at least it's out the way, I suppose.
Yeah,
and then wall balls, my knees. This is what I'm scared of. They're the first and the last as well. And I'll be like, at the beginning, crying with triceps. And at the end, I probably wouldn't even get up after the last fucking wall ball
throw. Quads are in pieces. Legs are shaking as you go down for your first squat.
Okay, so you train people now for HYROX, right?
Yeah.
So what does that look like? If I was to come to you and go, right, Travis, set me up. Let's go.
So first thing I do is it's a running game. It's a runner's game. It really is. When you've got your run into a tee, that's when you can start looking at the strength side of things. It's the whole hybrid athlete approach. That's how people are looking at it now. So you would do runs. I wouldn't go anything further really than 15K. It's not really needed too much. And then you'd start introducing all of like the sleds. That's the one that people are most worried about is if they can move for men 150, women 100kg sled. That's the one that people worry about the most. I'd say don't worry about that too much. Personally, I think it's the burpees and the lunges that catch you out. They're the two. You see the burpees take a while for a lot of people. Yeah. They're really tough.
I think that's what the... Why I haven't done it yet, but it's the opposite way around. I actually, because I do all that explosive movement, but I don't run. I've only just started running recently.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a running game, as you said. Like, my brother does all of these things as well. And he's like, it's the K's in between the things. You can do burpees, fine. You can do the sled pull, fine. But it's the K's in between it.
Yeah, because they last the longest. I mean, you're running for, well, people run between like 3.5 and 6-7 minutes. It's a long time to be running where you're on the stations for... I mean, 5-6 minutes maximum. Mm. So it's definitely a runner's game, 100%. And I mean, you've got to be good at weaving in and out of people because you probably saw it was busy.
Yeah,
it's true. Rammed. And
need
not
the agility.
All, yeah, not all the courses are like circular. Like Olympia at the weekend was, it was kind of everywhere.
Yeah,
it was
a bunch
of shows.
Mad, yeah. And the people, we had to run across the like track to get across the like thing. It was mental in
without
there.
Trying to get wiped out by anyone running past
or, like,
you.
Imagine like ruining their race because you like knock someone over. No. Okay, so... HYROX is hugely popular at the moment. It's literally everywhere. Why do you think it is like that? How do you think it got started? How did you get involved?
I think it's taken off because it's so inclusive. Like, I've done it with my dad on Saturday.
Oh.
I've done these fast races, and then my dad saw me doing it. I was like, right, let's do one, because it is really inclusive.
Mm.
The majority can do it, so it's really good to get people involved. And it's just good for gyms as well. There's a lot of gyms now getting involved with it. People are training. It gives you a good goal to go for. Some people go for time. Some people are just going to do it, complete it. And once you've got your time, the majority sign up again to go beat it.
Yeah.
So it is just a good fun, good laugh. And like you saw, the atmosphere just fills you up and you feel nothing like it.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? I love the word inclusive there, because it is so... When I was there, I was actually pleasantly surprised, because obviously on Instagram, you only see the people with the six packs and the people that have got like 1 hour, like what is it? Sub 1 hour PBs and all this. And you think, oh, fuck, like, do I have to go and do high rocks and like perform like that? But when I got there, I was like, you know what, fair play to these people that are like doing this and whatever time it takes them just to complete it.
Yeah, that's why I like doing it with my dad, because I was like, I just wanted to go out there and enjoy it. I enjoy every race I do, they're really good, but the majority of the time when you're doing it solo and I'm going out there to try and podium, there's a lot of pressure put onto you to do that. When I done it with my dad, it was just a laugh, just dragging him around, making like pushing him to do like all the pushes and stuff like that. And it's just a good laugh, good day out, especially with doing it with my dad. Was just a cool experience.
Yeah. Does he train anyway?
He does now. He does now.
He just left yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he's signed up for a solo in Birmingham now, so he's put himself in the hole there.
Yeah, good. What's his name?
Steve.
Steve. Go on, Steve. You've got to beat him now. You've got to compete against each other. But he gets a head start.
Oh, well, that's not fair, though.
Well, it is.
Straight off the line.
Yeah.
I'll give him 10 minutes.
Okay, fine. Okay, so talking about you enjoy every race that you do then, you are an endurance athlete,
yes.
Am I right?
Yeah.
So you've done ultramarathons. What do you prefer?
Ooh, this is a tough one. Yeah, a lot of time when I get called an ultramarathon athlete, I never really believe it, because it's one of those weird things. I do the ultras to help the mental strength more than the physical. So I've always done them with my friend Ted, and he's always like, oh, we should sign up for this, sign up for that. And then it's like, yep, okay, all right, lovely. And it's not necessarily going out there to try and win it. It's going out there to try and grow mentally. The physical helps, obviously, doing ultras, but a lot of the time you walk, run it.
Question.
Go on.
For the listeners, what is an ultramarathon?
An ultramarathon is anything further than a marathon. So
so far.
Yeah, tends to be 30 miles is what they say. So 50K tends to be like the ultramarathon that people call it. But like the High Rocks 24, I've done over 24 hours as far as I could run. Those sort of marathons, they're the ones I tend to go for.
Would you ever do like a triathlon?
I would like to try one. I'm just not very good at swimming.
Oh.
Not very good at swimming.
Right, get your armbands on. I reckon that's something you can improve on.
Little rubber ring.
Yeah, like that at the back. And then you competed in the Berkeley Marathons last year, which is the UK equivalent of the infamous Berkeley Marathon. That's definitely a play on words, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how did you find it? Are you tempted to do the original?
I would. You've got to get invited to the original. Yeah.
What is the original?
The
Tell
original,
us.
Oh, it is, I'm sure it's over 3 or 4 days, and you've got to complete 100 miles, but it's somewhere in the US, and it's just mountains on mountains.
No,
so
thanks.
It was Jasmine Paris who done it. She was the first female to ever complete it.
Wow.
And every time someone completes it, the guy makes it harder. So it's never the same race, and it's always getting harder. But effectively what you've got to do is you've got to run a marathon loop, then you get to rest for however long you want to go for, and then go again and again and again, so 5 marathons. And you've got to hit checkpoints, all self-sufficient. You've got to read a map and collect pages off of books.
It sounds like Survivor.
Yeah.
But a marathon.
Yeah, it's wacky crazy. It's good fun, again, when you kind of do it. But the one in the UK was based in the Cotswolds,
okay.
So not as hilly,
hot.
Which was quite nice. Yeah, and hot. Yeah, it's good, but you're trying to read a map, and I'm not very good at reading maps. I had like a week's practice.
Okay, so your tasks are swimming,
yeah,
and map reading.
I'll get on that.
So next time you're on the show, I'll be like, see, set you those tasks, and you've completed it.
These are goals for 2024,
yeah,
2025.
Okay, so what tips or advice would you offer to somebody that's looking to start their High Rocks journey?
Okay. I would say, first thing, if you don't already, get running.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, is talk to people who have done Hyrox about their experience. I think everyone in the community is really nice and they're really welcoming, and it's just a case of learning from other people's experience so that you can then know how it's all going to work. A lot of people read the course map and get confused. Just ask someone. Everyone's really friendly. Everyone's going to give you the advice. Ask someone how it works. They'll give you the advice.
Mm-hmm. What? How did you start? Where did you start?
So I started by my Hyrox partner, Alex Brooks. He said to me, everyone signed up for this race called Hyrox. Do you fancy it? And it was just a case saying yes.
It kind of just like, I feel like Hyrox came out of nowhere. All of a sudden it just like popped. My whole Explore page was like about it. And I actually know the MCs. I've worked with them before. And now they're both Hyrox ambassadors and it just kind of just popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, it all kind of went off last year. I think it was end of last year. It just boomed.
Yeah.
Everyone was doing them left, right, centre. And now you get everybody doing it. Like a London Olympia, it was over 3 days. There were thousands and thousands of people competing. And it's really cool to see that Something's grown massive over the past, really, 6 months, to be fair. And it, again, because it's so inclusive, it's so good to get into.
Yeah, exactly. It is. I think it's one of those that, like, because anyone can do it, it's just going to keep growing and growing. And we always, most people that I have in here, we talk about how the fitness industry is actually becoming more inclusive, and it's becoming more of a, well, last week we were saying it's like the dating industry now. Like, you go to a run club to meet somebody. But it is, like, it shows us how inclusive and how broad the spectrum is for the fitness industry these days, and how anyone can get involved, don't you think?
Yeah, I really like it. And especially being a coach in that environment is really good. You see a lot more people coming into the gym and saying, I want to train for a Hyrox because my friend's done it or my husband wants to do it. Everyone's got a reason for completing it, and everyone's heard of someone now who has done one. So where it is growing, it's really helping people find their achievement, find their goals within the gym.
Yeah,
it's a big help.
Do you do Hyrox classes in the gym?
Yeah, we do.
What gym do you work at?
I work at Unique Gym in Saffron Walden. So we're all group personal training, so we get 16 people.
Oh yeah, so you do classes in there then?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So where we do our Hyrox classes, again, involves running. So we tell people, run outside, get used to how you train your engine within running, so that when you come in, the runs is a lot easier. Big difference between running outside for 5K and running once you've done a sled push, though.
Yeah. So is that what you do, though? You get people to run around the block and then come in and do a sled push?
Yeah. Train your legs.
Won't be going to that class. No, I think there's loads of classes like that as well, like in and around where I live. And I mean, whenever it says Hyrox class, I think, oh, they must just be doing the exercises. But now that you've said it, they must actually include the runs.
Yeah.
If it is the running game.
It's definitely a running game. That's okay. What I realised.
So tell me then, what are your like goals? Do you have any aspirations? What is something that you want to achieve in 2024?
In 2024, so I've got World Championships next month.
Unreal. Singles Hyrox, or doubles?
Both. So I think goal is to last through the singles, to do the doubles on the next day. I don't mind where I come. I just want to try and get a PB.
Yeah.
So that would be cool. And then towards the end of the year, I would like to get probably one more podium for Hyrox and then just enjoy the journey overall.
You're nuts. Question, singles or doubles, which one do you prefer? Because doubles, obviously, you have your friend next to you that you can like share the weight with. But there must be something so rewarding about doing it on your own.
It's really cool doing it on your own. It's a lonely game. Obviously, like when you do any kind of running or any event by yourself, it is a lonely game. But once you've done it, you know that it was you that done it and it was your hard work. Doubles, I really enjoy doubles. It's a little bit quicker, but where you get to share everything, it's more of an out-and-out sprint. But it's a hard question. Probably doubles, I reckon. Probably doubles.
And what would be a PB for you?
PB for me? At the moment, for solos, I'm an hour and 3:30-something, and for doubles, I'm 54:15.
Jesus. Yeah. My brother got 59 minutes this weekend and I thought that was really good.
That is really good.
54 minutes. Jesus.
That was, in all fairness, that was my third race with my doubles partner.
That is incredible. So what do you want to get next time? You know, there was the fastest person when I was there this weekend was a guy that was between 40 and 49. I was like, you know what? There's hope for all of us.
Yeah.
We haven't peaked yet, guys. Apparently, like, you get better as you get older.
Yeah. Some of the elite athletes.
Your dad's going to beat
really
you.
Good.
Your dad is going to beat you, Steve. You're going to beat him. What the hell?
Yeah, it's really cool to see. That's what I mean. It's no one really knows where the sport is going in terms of when you're going to peak or anything. So it's really cool to see so many athletes getting into it and just absolutely smashing it. That is really cool. I think I would like to try and get sub-hour solo. I think that's definitely a goal for the end of the year.
I think you've got it.
I hope so.
100% got it in your locker.
It's really cool. But if anyone's never done one, a relay is good fun as well.
What's that?
So a relay, I done one yesterday. It's so you do two exercises and you do the run before the exercise. You could do any of the two. So obviously where the high rocks is laid out, yeah, you're a team of four. So everyone does their two runs into their exercise. But it doesn't matter what ones you do.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I done the run into burpees and then I finished off with run into wall balls. So I got a nice little rest in between. Yeah. But that one's just an out-and-out sprint, but it can be a good introduction to high rocks.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that's a good tip for people starting off then. Like, if you get a group of yous together, it builds your confidence.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing with that is you only get to try two of the exercises.
Yeah.
So,
do you get to choose, though, or do they allocate you?
No, you get to choose.
Because some people were racing at 7:30 last night. Yeah, that was bad. Like,
that was the relay. I started at 6:10.
That's so late, because I just feel like I'm someone that likes to train in the mornings most of the time. So if I have to wait till 7:30, I'd want to be in bed until like midday. So that, do you know what I mean then? Because otherwise I'm like, ready to go to bed now.
It means when do I eat?
Yeah.
When am I going to eat?
And then you're probably eating a whole day's worth of food before 7:30. I mean, maybe it actually did work out all right for some people, because some people need that energy, right?
Yeah. So I normally work out in the evening.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So I'm like past 8 p.m. I'm good. That's when I'm going for it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I much prefer it. I don't know why.
Well, I think you're amazing, and I think you've definitely got some PBs in you this year.
Thank you
so much for coming on. I will hopefully get to see you in a race at some point. I might see you on the floor there, because I'm going to compete at some point, but only if I'm going to get 1 hour, 8 minutes, not 54 frigging minutes.
That's the goal. That's the goal.
Thank you so much for coming on, my love. It was great to meet you, and good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Hey! FUBAR Radio presents.
Access all areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years?
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except
like,
you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 98.
I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury with me.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it was really necessary for me to come. The
Dating Show. I'm friends with a fair few sort of exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, isn't that a bit weird?
I think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of... You can be friends with someone. You can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR
Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello again. We are back and we are joined with the beautiful Nicole Vignola. I've just said, am I saying it right? Vignola. She's like, no.
Yeah, it is correct. Great.
So you're a neuroscientist and author of Rewire, Break the Cycle, Alter Your Thoughts and Create Lasting Change. Tell us about it.
So loads of people have thoughts, habits, behaviours that are holding them back. Mm-hmm. What neuroscience tells us is that these thoughts are sitting within the wiring of our brain. That's why the book is called Rewire, because we can actually rewire, change the pathways in our brains, so that we can change habits, behaviours, thought patterns, and break free of all these things that are holding us back.
Oh my God. So I haven't read the book yet. I would love to read it, by the way. So
Have you been sent a copy?
Not yet.
We will send you a copy.
Give you my address afterwards. So tell me then, it's your personal guide to understanding the neuroscience of your behaviour. So what does that look like then? Is it just relearning things, or is it a practice that you have to put into place? What's it look like?
Well, there's a 7-step process. It's a three-phase program. So phase one is ditch the negative. So we have things like negativity bias. As humans, we tend to dwell on that negative. Mm-hmm. That can show up in forms of either speaking negatively to ourselves or focusing on all the things that went wrong in our day, which means that we overlook all the wonderful things mm-hmm. in our day. So if I say to you, how many blue things are you in your environment right now? You'll start looking around and I say, okay, well, how many red things were there? And you're gonna go, well, I don't know because I wasn't looking for them. And that's kind of how, you know, negativity bias works. When we focus on the negative a lot, we start to sort of oversee the good things in our lives. So just teaching people, you know, the neuroscience of why we behave like this and how we can change it and why it shows up in the form of, you know, speaking negatively to ourselves. Then we have a 7-step process on how to shift the narrative. So that's when we get into the nitty-gritty of really rewiring and stepping into this new version of yourself, if you will.
I love that. It's do you remember The Secret?
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of that vibe,
yeah,
you know,
it's, yeah. But the science attached now. So, you know, for a long time, we thought that the brain wasn't capable of change after the age of 25, but we can actually make we call it plasticity. We can make plastic change well into old age. So anyone at home, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you can change.
Oh my God. So how long does it normally take then to change a habit or to change the way you think?
Habits take between 18 to 254 days, which I know is a big number, but it depends on the habit, depends on whether you are undoing a habit that's maybe been ingrained for a long time mm-hmm. or how much effort you're putting in. Now, we can actually create new synapses within a day to a few hours and a few weeks. And then it takes about a few weeks to a month to solidify those neurons or synapses. Mm. And then it takes up to months for the functional connectivity to change in the brain so that you're communicating better. As an example, when we increase our frontal cortex activity, so the part that's sitting in the front of your brain, we have better emotional regulation. So that takes a bit of time. But what happens is after a few months, you can actually become better at dealing with emotional situations because that part of your brain is stronger.
Okay, so is there actual exercises that you could do? Because I suppose the brain is a muscle, right?
Yes.
So we work, if you want your biceps to grow, you'll do bicep curls.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It must be the same thing.
Exactly. So when neurons communicate with one another, the more they communicate, the stronger they become. And that creates a pathway that then becomes habituated in your mind. We call it automaticity. So you don't think about how you brush your teeth or do your hair. Well, your hair maybe, yes, but how
well,
you make your coffee.
Not today. And just got thrown off.
Or turn on the light when you walk into the room. You just do it. Mm. And that's kind of how some habits and behaviors are, especially those kind of narratives that we repeat in our head that are kind of the background soundtrack to your life. Mm. And until you bring it to the conscious mind, it's just part of who you are and your background. But again, we can change it through neuroscience.
So that's so you can work on self-esteem, things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, build your confidence. I have a whole chapter on building self-trust and confidence. I have, and it's funny you said that about muscles, but basically we have a direct line of communication from our muscles to our brain. Mm. So when you contract and relax your muscles, they release muscle-based proteins called myokines. And these myokines travel up to the brain and they have positive effects. So not only is
exercise, that the endorphins?
Well, it's actually different. They have different effects. They okay. for part of endorphins. Endorphins are actually endogenous morphine molecules. Right. So it's like endogenous morphine. It's morphine in the body. Mm. And they work with the endorphins to make you feel good.
Okay. So hang on. So is that what when you say mind to muscle contraction?
Yeah. So when you contract and relax, the muscle release something called a myokine, and there's various different types of them. They travel to the brain, and they can. So, if one of them, as an example, irisin, is an anxiolytic, has an anxiolytic effect on the brain, so it reduces anxiety.
That's why fitness is so like
exactly.
Oh, you see, everything's connected.
Exactly.
I love this, you know, because it is someone that I've just been talking to before. We were talking about how fit your like exercise and stuff isn't just about how you look and things
exactly.
like that, and it's not just. Health doesn't just mean, you know, having a good body. Mm-hmm. It's so much more than that. And it's true. It's like how the mental health is so much connected to the bicep curls.
Exactly. And we can see it on a molecular level that this is actually having a direct impact on our brain health.
So, okay, we talk a lot about motivation being the key to achieving fitness goals. Is there a neurological way to hack your motivation? Asking for a friend.
And myself. So motivation is fleeting, unfortunately. You'll have that surge of motivation in the beginning. And what I always say is, you know, ride that wave, really take it in your stride and go with it because it will subside at some point. Mm. Now, the way that dopamine works, dopamine is the molecule for putting you in pursuit of pleasure or putting you in pursuit of movement. And it makes you feel good when you achieve those goals. But it's when you're at baseline dopamine, so you're sitting on the sofa, you are naturally going to be quite relaxed and quote unquote lazy. So a lot of people will be sitting on the sofa thinking, I should go to the gym, but I don't really feel like it. Well, that's obvious because your dopamine levels are at baseline. As soon as you get up and you think, I'm going to go to the gym, that's when dopamine rises and then you want to go to the gym.
Okay. And also, so I say this to my clients, motivation, it like becomes a choice at the end of the day because you have to be disciplined
exactly
when that dopamine level is at a low.
Yes.
And you have to be like, right, well, I've got to go today.
Exactly. So it shifts into discipline, from motivation to discipline.
So then is discipline also a neurological, what's it called, pattern?
Yeah, so we actually have an area of the brain called, I'll just throw it out in case anyone wants to research it, but it's called the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex. Now, that part of the brain actually increases in size in people that do things that they don't want to. So over time, what happens is that part of the brain is quite active, so it means that you are better at overcoming that feeling of not wanting to do something. So the more you do hard things, the more you're going to be accustomed to wanting to do them.
So like Travis that we've just had on that does ultramarathons.
Yes, I was hearing that.
The body doesn't want to do that, right? So his part of the brain is going to be massive because he's running over 30 miles.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I heard him say something about it's a mental stimulation rather than... Exactly. So I was so fascinated by the conversation because I was thinking his brain must, or his dorsal anterior cingulate cortex must be so big and active and healthy.
Because that must mean that... you essentially, as I've just said, you're training that part of your brain as well to overcome the negative. I always talk about my brother. It's only because I haven't done any marathons and I only know his perspective.
Yeah.
But he says that when he's doing marathons, it's the constant part of your brain saying, stop, 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 stop. But then the other part of his brain is going, keep going.
Yes.
So is that part?
Exactly. Wow. And I think there's a lot of people who say, oh, I'm lazy or I could never. And what science tells us is that we can. And that's what I want people to take away from this, is that we can, if you are somebody that maybe, I'm not saying everyone should go and do an ultra marathon, but little things, overcoming the small things, like sticking to a regular gym routine. Mm. Nobody really wants to do it. Mm. You just know, you learn that it's a good thing for you, and you start to enjoy the process, and you start to understand that overcoming it is part of the joy.
Yeah, I love that actually. It's enjoy the process of it. So we talk loads about like quick fixes and stuff, but I think it's just the overcoming of, when you do have eaten really well for a week or you have trained every day for a week and you're like, yeah, that was actually tough and every day I had to convince myself to go, but I actually feel frigging great for doing that
exactly.
now. And it makes you want to do more of it.
Exactly. And one little hack to improve your motivation or improve your productivity is to try and spend less time on your phone, especially in the morning. Mm. Now, when we wake up, the first hours of your waking day, depends on whatever time you wake up. If you wake up at 6, the first 8 hours, if you wake up at 10, your first 8 hours, so it's depending on the person, you'll have high levels of dopamine and norepinephrine naturally. That's just how our circadian rhythm works. Mm. So if you grab your phone first thing in the morning, you're driving that dopamine really, really, really high, and then it's going to crash. And then you have 10 o'clock, you're thinking, oh, I'm in a dump. I don't actually want to go to the gym. But if you can delay phone use for the first hour, ideally 2 hours of your day, I appreciate that's, very hard. And I know that it's hard. I wake up and the first thing I want to do is scroll. Mm. But that's basically putting you in a high dopaminergic state, which means you're reward seeking for the rest of the day. So then you're like doom scrolling at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, not being able to get off your phone and not wanting to go to the gym.
How funny. You know what? I've actually kind of just put two and two together. So I am someone that gets up, if I get up at 6 a.m., and I'm straight on my laptop, straight on my phone. But then about 2 p.m., I do crash and I don't want to do anything else. Mm. And I'm always like, oh, it's because I've been up since early. But it's actually probably because I've already used all of my,
Yeah.
So by the time it gets to that point, I need a nap to reboost them.
But naps are good. So my research was in how we can reallocate cognitive resources to our brain. So if your brain has a finite amount of energy, which it does, at 2 o'clock, you're going to be depleted, you're going to be tired, So replenishing those energy resources by having a little nap. So I only got 6 hours of sleep last night. So I was sitting outside here with my eyes closed, just trying to reinstate kind of energy and rest and digest so that I could drive everything back to my brain so I could have this conversation.
You're doing very well.
Thank you.
It's true that, and you know what? I am an avid napper. I've spoken about it before and I'll speak about it again. Some people, like my friend always says to me, I'm so jealous, I can't nap. And I can nap. I could go for a nap for like 2 hours a day. It's hard for me sometimes to get up because I'm like, this is so good. Why are naps so much better than normal sleep? I always wake up from a nap and I'm like, that was amazing. Yeah. I feel like I've been asleep for days. Yeah. But sometimes after a normal night's sleep, I'm like, oh, wasn't that great last night.
Yeah. I mean, so in an ideal world, some people can nap for 2 hours a day. I would say that if you're napping that much, maybe you're either not sleeping enough in the night and getting quality sleep then. But for anyone that struggles to nap, like I sometimes, it depends. It's like Russian roulette with me with a nap. I'm like, well, I won't, I fall asleep. Yeah. But even just closing your eyes and sitting in that silence for 10, 20 minutes is still considered like a non-sleep deep rest.
Like a meditative state.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a place of replenishment.
So you discuss stress in your book. What are your top tips for managing stress levels?
One of the quickest tips and easiest tips that you can do on the go or anywhere is the physiological sigh. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a double inhale, pause at the top, and a long exhale through the mouth. So let's do it together twice so that people can hear it. So double inhale through the nose, pause at the top for a second, and then exhale through the mouth. So let's go one. Let's do one more. You feel nice.
I feel dizzy.
I feel really good. I know. If you do like 10 of them, you start getting a little bit trippy. You're
like, yeah, I'm like, it's getting high. Okay, so what does that do?
So your brain has an ingrained mechanism in the back of your brain that's called the midbrain, and it regulates your breathing rate. So have you ever been stressed and you're huffing and puffing around the house? That's a good thing. So your body's trying to dump the stress. It's trying to dump the carbon dioxide and communicate to your brain that you're going into a parasympathetic state, which is a state of calmness. So sighing is actually good, even though we've attributed it to being an annoying thing. You know, when someone sighs, you're like, oh, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But we can fast track that by forcing the physiological sigh. So double inhale with a long exhale. And that closes that stress cycle. So you're communicating to your brain that you no longer need to be stressed, because the brain doesn't really know the difference between, you know, a lion or an email. It's just stress to the body. So we need to communicate that that threat is now gone. You know, in evolutionary times, in our primal times, the lion would have left and we would be like, whew, okay, relax from that. Whereas we have ongoing stuff all the time.
I find it crazy how, as you just said, the brain doesn't know if it's a lion or, you know, if it's just something that you've seen that annoys you.
Yeah.
But it is crazy to me. I'm not going to elaborate, but a couple of things happened to me last week that I was like, I'm fine.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden I was not fine. Mm. And I was like, my subconscious is obviously going, you're not fine. Cry or feel sick and all that stuff. And it's crazy how your eyes see something, but then part of the brain registers it. But then the other part is like fighting against it.
Yes.
How it affects that stuff. You know, like when people get nervous tummy or nervous, yes, things like
physiological
that.
Physiological symptoms of stress. But yeah, well, stress is a physiological mechanism that tells you to either run, fight, or freeze from the situation. So if you're not dumping or getting, or it's called a stress cycle. If you're not closing that stress cycle, it will manifest in the body.
So how do you manage that then? So if, like, you know, some people would like, oh, I'm just going to have a cigarette because I'm stressed.
Yeah.
Would it be the sigh to like try and relieve that?
Yes. Okay. So the physiological sigh.
Or meditating maybe?
Exactly. Now, the second thing is hobbies. So when they did a research study and they took two groups of people, they asked one group to sit on the sofa after being stressed and they asked the other group to play Tetris. And the group that played Tetris actually recovered from the stress a lot quicker because they were thinking about something
distracting
else.
Distracting their mind. Exactly. Yes.
So the brain doesn't perceive if that stress is still there or not, if you're still thinking about it. So those people on the sofa were remaining in a stressful state. So coming home after work and having a break, having a practice, whether it be a hobby or drawing or going to jiu-jitsu or the gym or whatever it is that can help you take your mind off the day's events and then walk through the door like a new person, quote unquote, so that you leave the stress at the door, because your home needs to be your sanctuary.
Yeah.
And one way to break that is to put something in there that will break that sort of pattern and cycle, so you don't bring it through the door.
And you always feel better once you've done that anyway. I always feel so much better when I have distracted my mind, whether that's for a walk or even just conversation about something else, you know. Yes. You always feel so much better.
Yes.
Is there anything that you've learned whilst writing this book that surprised you?
Yes, you just mentioned it. You said walking, and what blew my mind is, so when we walk, have you ever heard of EMDR therapy?
Yeah.
Exactly. So when we walk, when the images in our periphery are moving past our eyes are restabilizing them. It's called optokinetic nystagmus. Just throwing that in there in case
you know so many long words. I'm like,
I know, but there's many things I don't know. But basically what that does is that your eyes are in a somewhat EMDR type therapy situation, because they're moving laterally side to side. And what that does is it activates an area of the brain called the orbitofrontal cortex, which competes for resources with the amygdala. Your amygdala is your fear processing center that tells you there's threats in the environment. So if that is switched off, you can then think about your problems and your issues and your stress without the fear perception involved. Uh-huh. And that's why walking can be so calming.
Wow. So that is like when it's in therapy, they remove that element to be able to get you to focus on and take the fear out of it, right?
Exactly. So
trauma therapy.
Exactly. So EMDR therapy works in the same way, where they do goal-directed eye movements and then they reprocess the trauma without the fear perception involved.
Oh my God, you're so smart.
It's so mind-blowing. Thank you.
Well, that makes sense, but you've just relayed it and explained it so well.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's very well, kind. You are amazing. Cannot wait to read your book. Please send me one because it sounds...
I will.
I need help with my stress levels these days, guys. Okay. So please, I would love that.
The biggest chapter is stress.
Okay, great. Yeah, and confidence. I feel like I need to work on both those things at the moment. Thank you so much. Thank you. Fabulous. And good luck with everything.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in, my love.
Bye.
Amazing. As always, I always just learn so much. I'm literally sat in the studio just looking at this amazing woman with all these big long words like, how do you remember all of those things? But hopefully I will read her book. I'm just going to repeat the name of it so we all know again. It is called Rewire: Break the Cycle, Alter Your Thoughts and Create Lasting Change. And I definitely think it is one to read. So go get your hands on that. So I'm going to tell you things that I know a lot of stuff about now. It's not like the brain like that, but I can try. So, listener questions. Sophie asks, do you have any tips for training during your menstrual cycle? I deal with really painful periods, so I've never had motivation to work out. Sorry to hear that. I think period pains are just the worst. So I get them, but I don't get them as bad as some people, and they can knock it out of you. But I do find that training or just moving my body definitely helps, even if it's just going for a walk. And the week after your period is just like, you're like, I am a new woman. I could do anything. I could take over the world. I could do 12 Hyroxes like Travis. So I think just listen to your body. Do what you think that you can do. As I said, the week after your period is when you've got the most energy. You can take on the world. But then the week just before your period is where you're lacking a little bit. And it's because your body is dealing with something that's about to happen to you, you know? So maybe during that time, do things more like yoga, Pilates, long walks, just stuff that's a little bit less stress on the body. And then when you're feeling more on it, then the week after and the second week is where you can move mountains. But also, I think if you don't want to do anything, just eat well, rest up, and as I said, listen to your body, do what feels good. Okay, so Hazel asks, I'm 19 stone and I don't know where to begin. Do you have any tips? Literally what I've just said here, just start somewhere, go for walks, do something that makes you feel good. We've literally just talked about it. When you start and you feel the reward of doing something, it becomes like a little pattern. And, you know, start small. You don't have to be doing 12 Hyrocks like Travis. But just even if it's incorporating, as me and Sophie talked about earlier, if you sit down all day at your job, maybe every hour, every couple of hours, make it a non-negotiable for your day that you get up and you just do something. Even if it's 10 air squats, even if it's 10, pressing yourself against the wall, a press up against the wall, 10 star jumps. Just write yourself a little circuit in your notes and just do something that's going to get spike the heart rate a little bit and just get you moving. And you'll probably feel like a boost of endorphins, or what was the word that Nicole just said, micro something, which helps when you do exercise. And the more you do that, the more you will be like, oh, that actually feels so good. I want to do a little bit more. Or the runner that we had on last week, what's her name? Savannah. She literally did she just started by getting out there and doing her steps. And then now she's been bloody going for over a year. And she's like, I don't have to run a marathon every day, but I just get outside. And I think it's just starting, even if you just walk around the block 10 minutes, then the day after you could do 15 minutes. And then, you know what, Hazel, I think if you just start by little baby steps and incorporate nutrition, start to just do small changes that you can sustain, and then hopefully they will lead to bigger changes in the long run. Okay, so George asks, and he said, I'm starting my fitness journey, but I don't feel confident enough. You can do it. Get yourself into the gym. Get it done. Just get one workout in this week and it'll once again build onto something else. And on that note, I need to go to the gym. So I'm going to get off here and stop talking to you. Have an amazing week and I will see you all next time. Lots of love. Goodbye.